Thanks again for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 here on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. New York Times bestselling author James Rollins has a new Sigma Force novel out. It's called The Bone Labyrinth, and he's joining me on the phone to talk about the latest. James, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you, Mark.
I love the premise here. It begins, well, basically it's centered around the concept of the Great Leap Forward that happened when it came to human intelligence some 50,000 years ago. Talk about the Great Leap Forward.
You know, I'm always looking for that great historical mystery to build a novel around, and this is a bit of a historical and scientific mystery. It goes back 50,000 years ago, and it created a little bit of a mystery for anthropologists. We know at this point that for about 200,000 years ago, that the human brains have basically been the same size, shape, anatomy. Yet about 50,000 years ago, there was a sudden spike and explosion of art, ingenuity, weapon development, the production of grave goods. And anthropologists don't know why this happened. They coined this period of time the Great Leap Forward because there's this huge spike similarly in human intelligence, maybe civilization. They don't know why. One of the more accepted theories is that it's about that period of time when early man began to migrate out of Africa into Europe, began being exposed to new landscapes, new challenges, and of course required new innovation to deal with them. Maybe that was the source, but that's just one theory. Other theories include diet change, include the fact that the mini ice age was going on about that period of time. That might have done the trigger. But there's a new sort of theory that's being posited, one I explore within the pages of this novel, and deals more with the genetic basis of the human anatomy, where we came from and where maybe we're headed next.
And this all centers around the Sigma Force. And for those readers who aren't familiar with Sigma Force, explain what Sigma Force is.
Sure. Sigma Force is a group of special forces soldiers that have been recruited by DARPA, the Defense Department's Research and Development Wing. They've been retrained in various scientific disciplines to basically be field operatives for DARPA to protect against various types of threats. I describe them basically as they're scientists with guns, and they're a fun group to deal with.
And I love how your characters have developed over the, what is it, 10, this is the 11th novel in the Sigma Force
series? Number 11.
Yeah, number 11. How they kind of grown and evolved, how have you grown and evolved during the process when it comes to Sigma Force, James?
I think it's a combination of over the years. You know, I firmly believe that as a writer, you should be writing every day, but you should be reading every night. So I read books and I sort of see what other writers are doing. I think that's pretty cool. Can I borrow that writing tool that they've used and incorporate that? But also, I've learned who these characters are. To me, they've become, after 11 books, living with them for the past 11 years. I've got to know them very well. I feel like they're part of my family. I think I'm going to turn around the corner and that Gray Pierce is going to be standing there pointing a finger at me. What did you just do to me? So it's a fun group to work with. I'm very attached to the characters. Not that I'm not above knocking them off. That's one advantage of having a group of characters as your main set of characters, because no one's safe. I can knock off a character because somebody else can also be recruited into Sigma later on.
And you do have some wonderful new recruits that are always popping up along the way, too. I've been talking to James Rollins, the author of The Bone Labyrinth, his latest Sigma Force novel. You can learn more at our website. And explain a little bit about the plot. There are so many aspects, and I'm kind of a science geek, and you just push all my buttons, James, when it comes to the story in The Bone Labyrinth. But I want you to explain the plot so I don't give anything away inadvertently.
Sure. In the thumbnail, it starts when twin sisters, and they're both geneticists, they're attacked on two different continents. One is assaulted in Europe while investigating a medieval chapel found buried underground that is holding the entombed bones of a Neanderthal woman. The other sister is abducted from a primate research center outside of Atlanta, along with her research animal, a young sign language-speaking gorilla, who potentially holds a secret to the origins of human intelligence, and Sigma Force is called in to try to rescue these women. But they expose a Chinese plot also that's looking to genetically alter human embryos, all in order to control the next step in human evolution.
I wonder where your ideas come from. I mean, there are so many, and boy, you've hardly touched on what the story is in The Bone Labyrinth it's a good introduction there, James, but boy, there's a lot going on here. But I'm wondering, you know, where do you find inspiration for these plot lines when it comes to writing the Sigma Force novels?
I'm always, like I said, mentioned before, looking for that historical mystery, that piece of history that maybe ends in a question mark, and then I'm looking for that bit of science, that what if, where, you know, how's, where's this headed next, how that's going to challenge us as human species. I collect ideas. I counted this just last week, how many magazines I subscribed to. I think I've got a little bit of OCD. I subscribe to 36 different magazines.
Woo!
So if I ever come across them that may be of interest, I get my little X-Acto knife, I cut it out, I throw it in a little cardboard box. If I'm watching a show, Discovery Channel, National Geographic Channel, something comes up, I make a note, throw it in the box. It's messy, it's organized, but I try to keep it to one box. Otherwise, one box becomes two boxes, two become four. Then it's, you know, James Rollins on hoarders. You know, we want to keep it to one box. So as a consequence, you know, I have to sift through there, look for ideas that no longer interest me, or maybe another author's tackled, and then that magic happens where that bit of science, that bit of history end up in my hand at the same time, or on the floor at the same time sometimes. And I begin to see threads that connect the two together, and I'll do some research, try to see if there's anything there. Sometimes it dries up and goes away. Other times it begins to snowball, and that's when I know I have a story.
Explain your writing style. I mean, how you work when you are writing a book. There's a lot of writers who have different approaches, and I'm just curious about what your routine is when it comes to getting the words on the page.
Well, it goes back to when I was practicing full-time as a veterinarian. I only had, like, cracks in time in which to write, and I committed to myself at that point to writing 3 double-spaced pages a day, 5 out of 7 days of the week, and I thought if I ever get rid of my day job, I'll be much more productive, and I am. I write 5 pages a day. I found that's about as much as I can write in a day. I'm a slow writer. It takes me about an hour to write a page, so I usually write about 5 hours of new pages, and the rest of the day is research or calling people up and asking them questions, business side of writing, probably a little bit too much time on Facebook, and that's my day.
Do you plot out where these books are going beforehand, or do you let them evolve naturally?
You know, that's a big question. Do you outline or don't? You know, I've been at writing conferences where there's been, you know, on a panel of writers, one side's those that outline in great detail, there's other side that don't. They just like to have the blank page. By the end of that conference, they're usually in a fist fight because they don't even know how to talk to each other. But you know, I'm more in the middle ground. I know the beginning, I know the end, I know a few stopping points in between, the tent poles that hold up the story. But I don't necessarily know how A connects to B connects to C. To me, one of the joys of writing is that discovery, is trying to find that path to see where these characters are going to take me, is discovering who they're going to encounter. So that's where I get excited. That's where I get excited about writing, is when I'm sitting at a blank screen of page, I don't know what's going to happen. I painted my characters into a corner. I don't know how to get them out, and I'm going to have to discover that while I'm writing today.
And is that when you reach for a new character, when you draft someone new into Sigma Force?
Usually, if I paint my characters into the corner, it's a good, you know, I like that, because if I paint it in the corner and I don't know how to get them out, my readers aren't going to know either. So sometimes that requires, it's imaginative retooling. They're planting something early that I can plant off later, or sometimes finding a new trait in the character.
James Rollins is the author of The Bone Labyrinth, a Sigma Force novel, available where books are sold right now. It's the 11th in his Sigma Force series, and tells the tale of, well, the search for human intelligence and the beginning of human intelligence. And I love the science behind this. You do a wonderful job of incorporating the science into the fiction that you write, James. And you say parts of this book were inspired by real life, including an expedition that Neil Armstrong went on.
Neil Armstrong has a bit of a mystery associated with him, too. He was the first man that walked on the moon. When he returned, he became a bit of a recluse. He pulled away from the public spotlight. Yet, oddly, later in his life, he sort of reappeared again to lead an archaeological expedition into the jungles of Ecuador. Seems a strange thing for an astronaut to be pursuing. And the reason behind that is not only true, it's sort of startling and becomes sort of a critical part of this story.
Well, and another critical part of the story is a Catholic priest, the Leonardo da Vinci of Jesuits, I think he was called. Introduce us to this fellow.
I love plucking these characters out of these historical characters out of the past and shining a spotlight on them. You know, I've got a cousin that's a priest, and Pat always gives me these great information about some of these characters. And in this case, it's a 17th century Jesuit priest. His name's Father Anthonius Kircher. He was not only a deeply devoted priest, but he was also sort of a master of 100 disciplines. He was dabbled in medicine, geology. Even today, he's considered to be the father of Egyptology for his study of hieroglyphics. He was also a bit of an adventurer. At one point, he lowered himself into Mount Vesuvius shortly before an eruption, just so he can better understand volcanism. You know, I love this—the fact that he's sort of this mixture of a man of faith and a man of science, and a bit of an adventurer. And so he also plays a role in the story because there's a mystery also associated with him.
Well, and so it's funny, James, I have to say from what I know about you and your work that I think you resemble the father to some degree.
Oh, I don't know about that, but
well, maybe not lowering yourself into Vesuvius, but you know, still
great character. I mean, when I read about him, I thought I've got to put this guy in a book.
Well, as what is your research process? You said you spend part of the time writing, but then you do spend time getting questions answered. Are these questions you have beforehand, or questions that pop up as you're writing?
A lot of times it's both. I mean, I'll do about 90 days of research, but the 91st day, actually, I start putting words on paper. Otherwise, I just keep researching, and by that point, I'm really just playing.
So, right.
I actually start writing. But every day, I have to research more things, whether it's looking up on the internet, calling somebody. Now, I always tell myself I'm the laziest researcher out there because I prefer somebody to tell me something rather than me having to look it up. I also love asking questions. When I travel, especially, I was in Beijing. Not for research for this novel. I just love to travel. I spent 3 weeks in China. I don't know if they're going to ever invite me back if they ever read this story. But anyways, I asked this Beijing gentleman, tell me something that nobody knows about this city. And he goes, oh, well, you know, beneath Beijing, there's an entire underground city. It's the width and breadth of the city. It extends out to the mountains. It was built during the Soviet era. So in case the Russians ever attacked us, the entire population can recede underground. It's still there. It's crumbled into a bit of ruin. There's areas that have collapsed, but it's still down there. As a matter of fact, during the Tiananmen Square crackdown, that's the way the Chinese government moved troops into position and even tanks into position, was by rolling them through this underground city. So it's still there. It's quite elaborate. Some tunnels are large enough for, you know, two tanks to run next to each other down this these big, gigantic tunnels. And I thought, when I learned about that, I've got to set a story there. I'm going to blow some stuff up.
I bet. Well, what was the most fascinating thing you learned as you were doing research for the Bone Labyrinth here? As I said, there are so many facets to the...
There is, and it's just one weird little tidbit, and I'll share that with you, because it still sort of startled me. I consider myself a man of science. I'm a former veterinarian, biology, evolution of biology background. And I've experienced a few eclipses in my time, but I never really questioned the oddity of a total eclipse. You know, when a total eclipse occurred, the face of the moon fits perfectly over the face of the sun. We've all seen that. Yeah, I never really questioned how odd that is. And the reason why it's odd, why it even occurs, is that the moon sits exactly 1/400th the distance between the Earth and the sun, and is 1/400th the size of the sun. So it just takes that perfect symmetry to get that perfect total eclipse to occur in our skies. No other moon anywhere in our solar system does that. No other moon ever discovered, and other systems have ever matched this perfect symmetry, only here. Isaac Asimov, a famous science fiction writer, once described this odd alignment as the most unlikely coincidence imaginable. And so this book explores that, too. Why is that perfect symmetry there? Is it just coincidence, or is it something else?
So you do other work beyond the Sigma Force novels, including some the middle-grade novels and other work. What do you enjoy the most?
You know, I've always written 2 books a year, and so I love sort of stretching my literary legs, so to speak, and I do a Sigma novel every year, but my other part of the year I like to maybe just sort of dabble in other things. I've written co-author projects to see what that was like. I've written a middle school series just to see what that was like. So I think, it's if I wrote the same thing day after day after day, I might get a little tired of it, but I think by, doing different projects like this, it keeps me fresh. It allows me to explore things as a writer that maybe I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise, and maybe even learn things that I can incorporate and pull into a future Sigma novel.
Well, I love learning and being thrilled by your novels, and thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Mark.
James Rollins, the author of The Bone Labyrinth, his latest Sigma Force novel, a best-selling author, also writes middle-grade novels. You can learn more about this book, The Bone Labyrinth, and his other work at our website, wvxu.org. This is The Book Club at 91.7.